Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Where you stand?
LA living gridlocked in the fast lane. Trying to strike a rich match, play my cash game. At least a couple degrees from the coast where they got funny.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, episode 165. This is an episode I taped actually a few weeks ago with writer Harrison Fagan. Harrison is a really interesting guy, has Big West connections and Lakers connections, and so I thought he'd be a fun person to talk a little bit of basketball with, since I don't get to talk too much NBA anymore, since Luke and Andy haven't been on the podcast much over the past few years. So I talked a little with Harrison about the Lakers. He writes for Silver Screen and Roll, which is an SB Nation blog for the Lakers, SB Nation site for the Lakers. He's also a student at Cal State Fullerton and a Southern California native, and covers the Big West in terms of basketball as well for the Daily Titan, I think, at Cal State Fullerton, the paper there. So he had a lot to say about a lot of things, and I hope you enjoy the conversation as much as I did. It's Harrison Fagan on the Fansmanship podcast. Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast. We have today with us a guest from Southern California. He is a writer or editor at the Daily Titan in Fullerton. He also is a writer at the SB Nation blog for the Lakers, which is called Silver Screen and Roll. It's Harrison Fagan. What's going on, Harrison?
Not too much, Owen. I hope you can't hear the sirens going off outside. I promise I'm not in like a really unsafe area. It's just, I think an ambulance just drove by. But yeah, I mean, everything's going good. I'm here at the Daily Titan. We're on a production night, and I figured what better time to call in and record a podcast than slack off my work on our other sports editor.
Now, are you a sports editor there? What's your role at the Titan?
So my official role is sports social media editor. And okay. So it means that I'm mostly in charge of our online presence, or I guess my job description would be to be in charge of our online presence and social media stuff. But in reality, I write a lot of the content as well, and I help plan it. And we're essentially co-sports editors. We work together on a lot of stuff and really help cover each other's bases. But there, we have a sports editor and a new position for this semester that they created for me, sports social media editor.
There you go. Well, and what year are you at Fullerton?
We'll go with super junior. I'm 25.
Okay.
I took kind of like a winding path, I guess, to get where I'm at. I was originally a psych major and I wanted to be a special education teacher.
Yeah.
And, you know, I ended up deciding that I wanted to go a different direction. I wasn't sure if that's what I wanted to do anymore. So I was like, while I was kind of figuring out what that was, I started blogging, and then I realized that what I wanted to do was write about sports and do something much less noble with my life. So I decided that to do that, I'd have to get a degree in journalism. And so that's why I eventually transferred from Irvine Valley College to Cal State Fullerton. And now I'm here and I'm working in the at the sports section on the paper, as well as, you know, you mentioned the Lakers thing. I also am the associate editor in chief at Silver Screen and Roll. So
yeah.
I stay busy. I'll say that.
Yeah, that's for sure. Do you know Michael Bolden from Irvine Valley College? Used to play hoops there, transferred to Cal Poly.
No, I don't think so.
He's probably around your age, actually.
I don't think so.
Yeah, anyway, he played down there, I think, for 2 years before he transferred up here. He was on the Cal Poly team in 2014, 2013, that went to the NCAA tournament and won the Big West tournament. So there you go. Random fact about Irvine Valley College.
Yeah. no, see, I'm tall, and so some people think that means that I'm actually, like, good at basketball, but that's not true at all. So I definitely wasn't hanging out the basketball team at IVC.
Got it. And you're probably writing about other things even then if you were blogging. So there you go. Funny also, because I guess I'll call it my real job is actually in education too. So we can talk about that sometime too. But that's what I do during the day. So as far as this year and Cal State Fullerton's team, I wanted to start there with you since that's where you are. The Titans I saw up here a couple of weeks ago, and Cal Poly's, I think, done playing them now for the season.
But Cal State Fullerton swept the series against Cal Poly and looked kind of impressive in doing it. They're one of those teams that's super long, very athletic at the guard positions. Cal Poly's got some, you know, little feisty guys, but Fullerton with Khalil Ahmad and Trey Coggins and even Lionheart Leslie to a point, you know, are just kind of a team that kind of keeps coming at you, along with the freshmen that they have. Seems like Dedrick Taylor maybe has a team finally, I think is his fourth year, that maybe he feels like he can get into the Big West tournament and really start to compete and try to upset some teams.
Yeah, I think right now the sense that I get is that they're cautiously optimistic about this roster that they have right now. But the thing is they've been so up and down
right. This
year. They've had like stretches where they've played really badly and they've just looked kind of listless. And then they've had stretches where everything kind of comes together. And I think you saw that up there at Cal Poly when they were playing and how good that they can look. When, especially when Trey Coggins' shot is on, like it really was that night against Cal Poly.
Right.
And so they're certainly really talented, but it's a matter of as cliche as this is to say, if they hit the tournament with some momentum. I mean, they've become specialists at kind of, you know, some would say shooting themselves in the foot with turnovers, but Dedrick Taylor has actually used an analogy about hacking their own limbs off with a machete and comparing that to their turnovers a couple times. So, you know, it's something that they're really not happy with. They've turned them by. I have KenPom pulled up right now and they lead the Big West in turnover percentage at 22.7%.
Right.
So that's not good.
Right.
And so that's definitely something that they have to clean up. But yeah, well, like you said, they're certainly talented. There are some nights where their defense looks really good. There are some nights where it looks less good, but you know, I think that kind of is par for the course with a younger team. I mean, you mentioned Coggins and Leslie, who are both seniors.
Right.
But then you mentioned Ahmad and Rowe, or you mentioned
Ahmad and Rowe.
Lionheart.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. You mentioned Ahmad and Rowe, who are both Ahmad's a sophomore, and then Rowe is a freshman, who I think has been even more ready to play than maybe even they expected.
Sure.
So, you know, that's just going to happen with a younger team. And they have a couple freshmen coming in off the bench that play roles for them. So, yeah, I think that that's just kind of what happens with freshman teams.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I see Fullerton as dangerous just because, like you said, they have senior guards. They have a guy who could, you know, who can carry you for a game or two in a tournament if he's super hot in Coggins. And you have, I guess, athleticism around him that if those guys are engaged, you know, if Ahmad's engaged on both ends of the floor, and if Rowe, you know, it takes sometimes a year for other teams to get real good scouting reports on other teams in the conference, or other new players in the conference, I guess I'll say. And so, you know, Rose really made an impact and I mean, was dynamite in the game, you know, that I saw here in SLO. And then, you know, another guy who I think is maybe another version of an X factor, and I'm looking for his name here. He's the other guard, and he's a Kyle Allman, yeah, there you go. Who's another kind of long
very,
guard who can
long,
play athletic.
Expand, yeah. Very incredibly athletic.
Right. They have all the players. They have like five guys who are the player type that Cal Poly is missing this year, actually, which is really interesting. You know, they've had Dave Nwaba and Bolden, the guy from IVC, was like this, and a couple other guys who've just been this kind of long wing player or a wing player who is super athletic. And Fullerton seems to have two or three of those guys at least, maybe more, who can make an impact on the game, and in a conference tournament where there's slightly longer, you know, maybe timeouts are slightly longer, maybe teams are using using them in a different way, you know, can get some rest, and that, you know, maybe perceived lack of depth doesn't make as much of a difference, you know, when compared to a team like Irvine or Davis that, you know, maybe go 10 deep in terms of, you know, their roster.
Yeah, I mean, comparing that, they're certainly long and athletic. Comparing them to Nwaba might be doing David a little bit of a disservice, having covered him with the defenders now a little bit, just because, you know, and that's no disrespect meant to Cal State Fullerton. Just David Nwaba is really, really talented, and he's been a huge difference maker for the defenders this year.
Yeah, I remember when I saw him on campus, there was a player here at Cal Poly named Sean Lewis, who was just the leaper that Nawab is, if not a little bit higher in terms of just getting up, you know, high for how tall he was. He was about the same height, but he was skinnier. Sean Lewis, who's a left-handed guard. And but Dave's dunks, I mean, he would attack guys. Sean Lewis would do more of, you know, the catch the alley-oop at the top of the at the top of the square, you know, when nobody was on him, and throw it down kind of thing. But Dave, you know, Dave looked for guys to attack when he was here at Cal Poly. And it's one of the reasons why I was so excited that he got a chance with the Defenders. There were games throughout his college career that would be, for example, on like the Pac-12 network, where I'd look for the highlights the next day somewhere. And the Pac-12, I'm sure, just burned those things like as soon as they happened. Just burned the tape, you know, in terms of a guy from Cal Poly, you know, attacking guys on Oregon and Arizona, you know, players from these high major schools that couldn't jump with him and couldn't keep up with him in terms of just the sheer athleticism. I was excited to read your post about him on Silver Screen and Roll, and we'll kind of segue into it. You know, you wrote an article about Dave and being from LA and a soft-spoken guy. I'm sure you've come to talk to him a little bit. But what were your kind of first impressions about Dave, and when you saw him maybe dunk on somebody for the first time, how did that go?
Yeah, so talking to David, it's kind of funny because of you mentioned how soft-spoken he is, and that's not what you expect from somebody whose game is kind of as, I don't know if loud's the right word, because I guess when I think of loud, it's like a, you know, high scorer, which he really isn't, but like it loud in the sense of he will dunk on guys and he will block guys emphatically. And, you know, a lot of the time after stuff like that, you expect a bunch of trash talk, but that's really not him. That doesn't seem to be his personality. He almost seems shy. And, you know, I got a chance to, after I wrote my piece about him earlier this year with the Defenders, I ran into him at a Laker game that I was covering. And he was there and we were talking and he started asking me, he's like, oh, so this is your job? You get to come here for work? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, that's cool. You have like the coolest job in the world. And I'm like, dude, I just saw you take off from like basically the free throw line and dunk on someone, you know, like, and like you think I have the coolest job in the world, but like, that's just his personality. And he's just kind of, he's laid back dude, I think. And you know, it does contrast a little bit with just how athletic he is, or I guess what you expect from somebody who's like that athletic and that talented and, you know, just gifted, yeah, I guess, on the basketball court.
For sure. His teammates actually called him Sav, which is short for Savage, I think, for the dunks that he dunked on guys, you know, sometimes. And he certainly lives up to that. And you know, whenever he goes to the hole, there was that dunk on Michael Bryson that I saw. And of course, that's a gaucho, and that's a big rivalry here at, you know, on the Central Coast. Neither team's doing very well this year, but the dunk on Michael Bryson was the one of the year for me. What was the first time you saw him maybe throw down on somebody or make one of those plays?
You know, I honestly don't remember who it was because there have been so many this year.
Yeah.
But yeah, he just has a real knack. Like, it's not even just like, you know, taking off on like the fast break or things like that. Like, he will get them on tip dunks.
Right.
And that's almost the craziest thing about it, because not only just that the athleticism to get up there, but the timing that you have to have on stuff like that. And like how he still, and what's almost most impressive to me is how he still manages to create space for this stuff on his drives and getting into the lane, despite kind of his lack of a jumper.
Right.
Because he just has this really, really great, and I guess that also ties into the sense of timing, is that he the second you look away, he's at the rim with his hands up ready for a pass. And he's really good at catching those passes. A lot of the time, you know, the Lakers have seen this with like athlete after athlete that they've tried over the last couple of years at that center spot, where, you know, they just can't catch a pass. Like, that's been the biggest problem for D'Angelo Russell, I think, over the last couple of years, is that the Lakers just haven't had bigs that can really catch passes super well on the run, by and large. And
on a pick and roll or on a semi-fast break, right?
Problem. He can catch really well.
Yeah. Yeah. I got you. Yeah. And, you know, being the focal point of Cal Poly the last couple of years, you know, certainly has helped him in that way, where, you know, Big West teams knew the report, and they, you know, they sagged off him and didn't let him, or tried not to let him get to the rim. He did anyway. And, you know, the teams that didn't scout him as well, which was some of those Pac-12 schools, you know, Stanford and Arizona and Oregon and Washington, to name a few, got punished for it at times. When you look at his game, you mentioned his lack of a jumper. Is that something that he talks about working on? I would imagine when you get to a place where you're a professional, where you don't have to go to school every day, something like a jumper is something that, if you're a D-League player, is something that you can maybe kind of get. I don't know. I mean, it, maybe guy to guy it's different, but what kind of development has been talked about? I've seen his shot chart. It doesn't look like he's trying many in games, but that's got to be something that he knows he's got to maybe improve at if he thinks, you know, he wants to take a step to the next level.
Yeah, when I wrote my original piece about him earlier this year, we talked about that, and he said that it's kind of the biggest thing that he was working on, if I remember correctly. And then, you know, it really is, if you go and you show up there early, he's out there shooting jumpers pretty much almost the entire warm-up. And the crazy thing is his jumper doesn't look like horrendously broken or anything. Like, it looks okay,
right?
You know, just like mechanics wise it like maybe it's a little slow, but other than that, like, it looks okay. It's not like he's not Michael Kidd Gilchrist or something,
right?
Like, it looks all right, and but he seems to make a decent amount of them in warmups, and it almost goes to show you how good everyone is at that level,
right?
Because everybody looks like, you know, like Steve Kerr basically in warmups, and then all of a sudden it translates to the game, and their guys, so their bodies flying at you, their arms closing out, and your jumper, it's a little bit harder to make a jumper. But
sure,
he looks okay in warmups. He's been trying it a little bit more over recent weeks. The last game that I was at, I think it was their last home game, he had 1-3 bounce in from the corner, mm-hmm. and then he airballed another one, and he was pretty self-deprecating about it after the game. But, you know, I think his confidence is getting there, and I think he understands that that's what he has to do. Because if he has that, I think he definitely is a prospect on the next level. It's just hard to be a 6'4 guard, no matter how good of a defender you are,
right,
and either not be like a superlative ball handler or a good shooter and be in the NBA.
Right, right. Yep, absolutely. And, you know, you're right. His jumper doesn't look like, you know, Charles Barkley's golf swing or something. It's, you know, it's not crazy. I think he had a wrist injury too, maybe his junior year that was something about that kind of probably prevented some of that development in college too. Looking at the defenders, it's a place, and I have a couple of kids and live up here in San Luis Obispo, so it's kind of hard for me to get down to games like that. But that's like, that to me, you know, when I go to like a defenders game, I've been to like some Galaxy games when they've played kids who are on Cal Poly, you know, in the U.S. Open Cup in terms of soccer. You know, I try to get out and about when I can. I'll be at spring training in March as well, trying to work on some Cal Poly guys in the spring training camps in Arizona. But the defenders just seems like it would be an awesome kind of product to go see. There's only like 10 rows on each side, at least that's what it looks like, or 10 rows on maybe on just one side. And you got guys who, like, is it Zubac or Zubac? 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 How do you?
Zubac,
yeah. Okay. So I mean, you got guys like him who maybe the next day are in an NBA game. What kind of an atmosphere is it in there? I know it's in their practice facility, right, where they play. What kind of an atmosphere is a D-League game?
Yeah, so it's in the Lakers practice facility, and how that's set up is the Lakers actually have two basketball courts on that facility, and what they do for defenders games is they put – or not – is it two? Now I'm questioning myself. But they roll carpet over one half of it, basically,
right.
And then there's a basketball court that on the other side that the players actually play on, and then so yeah, it goes about it's about 10 rows deep, maybe, if that, and you can get like courtside tickets for like $100, and I don't know how much Zubac is going to be coming back now that he actually kind of has a role with the Lakers,
right?
But I mean, the basketball, they're the best team in the D-League right now by record. They're either first or second. They've been going back and forth with Sioux Falls all year, but they're the best team in the D-League. They play a really entertaining style of play. But really, yeah, the D-League as a whole is an entertaining style of play. It's fast-paced. Teams shoot a lot of jumpers. They get up and down. There are lots of dunks, lots of transition play. And so it's entertaining basketball. You're never going to be closer than you really are to really even most college games. You don't really get to sit like quite as close.
It seems like a high school game atmosphere. Yeah, it seems like a high school game atmosphere.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's not like crazy rowdy or anything, but it's fun basketball to watch. And if you're a fan of the game, you're not going to be closer than you are in the Defenders facility. That's for sure.
Yeah, I've wanted to get down there and cover Dave a little bit and do some maybe take some pictures and some stuff like that too. So I don't know how long the season lasts in the D League, but that's on my list of if I'm in LA, that's on my list of things to look up and check out. So you write for this SB Nation blog. Of course, if you're like a Dodger fan, you know, True Blue LA is an SB Nation blog. I actually randomly wrote for a FC Dallas soccer one for a while. And so, right. Yeah. Totally random. But when you look at covering the Lakers and the Defenders, or you do both, obviously. So let's talk a little Lakers. Me being a lifelong Laker fan, you grew up, are you from Orange County originally?
Yeah, I grew up in Newport Beach and I lifelong Laker fan. It's a little different now that I cover the team. It's not quite as like diehard of fandom.
Exactly. You can't.
Yeah,
be, yeah.
I'm local. I came of age during the Shaq and Kobe years. So yeah, it's always been Lakers for me.
What high school did you go to down in the OC?
I actually went to Estancia.
Estancia, okay, there you go. And so you're a Laker fan. You decide you want to write. You're covering the team now. Back, I don't know, what was it, 4, 5, 6 years ago, whatever it was, when the Lakers made so many moves. So let's kind of start big picture. They made so many moves to get to kind of keep the Kobe prime alive. While he was still in his prime, they made moves for Dwight Howard. They made moves for Steve Nash, which really killed him. And we're kind of seeing that now in terms of this year's team and what motivations they may have for a top three protected pick that would really hurt them if they had to give it up, because it would also mean, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm picturing it would also mean next year's pick is gone too, right? Along with
no, they would get to keep next year's pick, but if they lose this year's pick, they get to keep next year's pick, but then they lose a first rounder the following year. Keep this year's pick, then they lose next year's pick for sure, but they get to send 2 second rounders to Orlando the following year rather than sending Orlando their first round pick.
Right. So basically it's costing them, if they don't get a top three pick this year, it's costing them a first round draft pick essentially to be able to do that.
Yeah, costing them 2 first round draft picks essentially. Yeah.
And I know I'm sure you're versed in this, but I'm picturing that around that time was around the time Dr. Buss was ill and close to passing away maybe, and you know, kind of everybody knew it and they tried to make this last ditch effort to get some guys together, and obviously it was ill-fated in the end. How can fans kind of reconcile what happened then with you know, having to kind of pay the piper now, and this team I feel like is good enough to not be in the bottom three in the NBA, but they recently made some moves in terms of who's in the starting lineup and kind of got a win out of it last night, right, against New York. If it wasn't 2 nights ago, I think it was last night against New York.
It was last night. Yeah. As of when we're recording this, it was last night.
but then they you know, they're making these moves to start younger players, which in the long run may mean that they end up in a bottom three pick. What was your kind of take on getting starting the younger players, I guess, benching some of the veterans and their response to that?
Well, it comes off as like a tank move, because I think when most of us talk about tanking, it's, you know, you play your young guys and you see what happens. At least that's generally what I mean. And, you know, for the Lakers, if the young guys win them enough games, then they're in a better position than they thought. If the young guys win them enough games to lose their pick, then they're in a better position than they thought they were, at least as far as how far along those guys are. But yeah, they kind of benched the veterans. Mozgov was a DNP CD. Luol Deng, he came in off the bench and he played about the same minutes, maybe a few less. but off of the bench instead of in the starting lineup. But the move actually, I mean, the caveat is that the New York Knicks are terrible.
They're in a similar boat as the Lakers on some level in terms of what they're trying to do and looking long term, except that they still have their Kobe albatross in Carmelo, where he's at right now. So
yeah, well, he's a little better than Kobe was towards the last like 2 years or whatever.
Sure.
You know, no, I get what you mean, and yeah, they're in a weird situation right now as a franchise. That's for sure. We're like they've just been really disappointing for like the last several years, and really the only promising young guy they have is Porzingis. Things about Hernan Gomez, I haven't gotten to watch him a whole lot this year. He didn't look too great last night, but not.
Harrison, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Go ahead.
Did I cut out?
Yeah, you cut out for just a second, but I think it was my fault. Keep going.
Okay, so I was just saying that, you know, Hernan Gomez didn't play a whole lot for the Knicks last night, but I think, you know, he didn't play very well for the Knicks last night, but no one on the Knicks really played all that well. But I think, you know, like the Lakers, as far as their starting lineup change, it seemed to kind of spur better energy. I think having Tarik Black out there and kind of activity kind of made a difference. I think Brandon made a difference. And they seem to be overall energized by the move. And, you know, it looks pretty good schematically. Like, we'll see if that can continue when they start to play good teams. But they looked better while they were benching their two best players. Or they're not their two best players, their two most expensive players.
Most expensive and those vets.
Your two best players, but definitely haven't been.
So at the end of this season, Harrison, when all is said and done, are the Lakers going to be at least in like a 50-50 shot at having a top three pick?
Yeah.
If you had to make a prediction.
Yeah, I think they're going to be around there, because starting lineup change aside or whatever, I just think that they're too young to win enough of these games to drastically hurt their lottery odds. I mean, maybe they get to fourth, in which case they'd have like a 38% chance. But whether they're in second or third, they have either a 55.8% chance or a 46.9% chance of staying in the top three and keeping their pick. So essentially either a slightly underweighted coin flip slightly weighted coin flip either way, either in their favor or not in their favor.
Right.
So they're going to be around those odds, I think. And, you know, Phoenix playing better lately helps them. But, I mean, yeah, we'll see. Their early season play is going to make it a little bit more of a gamble than I think. I don't know. I guess a lot of people – I guess I didn't really think they were going to be in contention for a top three pick this season. It was kind of just like let them play and let the cards fall where they may. But they really fell off a cliff there for a while, and it's probably going to come down to the wire. But I'd say, yeah, they'll probably have about a 50% chance.
Yeah, absolutely. And Laker fans will be hoping that I guess you got to hope – it's really hard to root for a team that's tanking and root for them to tank. But in the long run, it's just such the way the NBA is right now that you got to have you got to get a great player somehow, and generally that's with a top pick in the draft. And if you don't have draft picks, you don't have very much. And especially with this new CBA, it's going to be really interesting to see how these teams that have operated like the Lakers have for so long, in terms of just, you know, getting rid of first round draft picks for so many years and not really caring about them because they were always in the 20s. Now that they need to care about them, they don't necessarily have them. So it'll be interesting to see kind of where they go and how they go. You've been covering the Lakers now for a little bit. Who's a randomly, surprisingly, kind of great guy to deal with in terms of the media?
You know, I don't know that it's surprising, but it might be just because he's not a guy that gets quoted a ton. But Mozgov is actually really pleasant to deal with in the media. He's always really, really honest about his opinions on things. He'll give you his like unfiltered opinion. He's just like kind of a fun guy to talk to in the locker room. So I'd go with Mozgov just because I think a lot of people don't really necessarily know that about him. I guess like the runners up would probably be Tarik Black and Larry Nance Jr., but I think a lot more people probably know that those guys are pretty good with the media as well.
Got it. Yeah. I would imagine a guy like Larry Nance, who's been around basketball and the media for a while, would be one who might be a candidate to
Larry
be
Nance Jr.
really
could,
easy.
Larry Nance Jr. could be a politician when he retires. It would not shock me.
Excellent. Excellent. So, okay. Well, Harrison, you know, I really appreciate you coming on and giving us, you know, insights on some random Southern California basketball stuff. Since I've had kids, the Lakers haven't been very good. And so, you know, kind of keeping up with what they've been doing and how they've been doing has been a little bit more of a challenge, I guess. And it's always nice to read your posts on Silver Screen and Roll, your Twitter feeds. Do you have two Twitter feeds?
Yes, I have at HM Fagan, FAIGEN, for my Lakers coverage and most of my other stuff. And then for Cal State Fullerton stuff, since this is the rare podcast where both of those things cross over,
I have
at H Fagan CSUF.
H Fagan CSUF, which is for the Cal State Fullerton stuff. And Harrison does a good job for the Daily Titan there as well. A man who wears many hats, and I'm sure we'll wear many more moving forward. And like reading your stuff, and keep up the good work.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate you having me on. This was fun.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Streetlights so bright, they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. You lift me up.